بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. When there is a challenge, when there is a trial, then the true colors of a person surfaces. Before the challenge and before the trial, everybody can say, I am true, I am honest, I am good. But Umar radiallahu anhu was inquiring about some individual, that how honest and how good is he. In an Islamic judicial, the claimant is required to furnish evidence. But the evidence that he will furnish will be scrutinized. This is my witness. So separately they will scrutinize him to see how reliable, how authentic he is. Then they put him into the box. Any person that can't come and stand as a witness. So sometimes people confuse ghibat and investigation. Investigation is a different thing, and ghibat is a different thing altogether. Fatima bint Qais radiallahu anha was separated from her husband. She wasn't too comfortable with the husband, and she asked for a separation. And she must have had some encounter with the husband the previous night, and by the morning she was near the entrance of the house of Nabi Sallallahu Alaihi Wasallam. What happened? I can't manage with this person here. She says that I don't have any complaint about him. His character is immaculate. His deen is absolutely perfect. But I just can't agree with this person. Perhaps what I understand, that he, in his looks, he wasn't looking all right. And she couldn't put up with the looks. So she says, I don't have any complaints about his character, his Islam and his deen. But yes, I can't. So I need to have a separation. So Nabi Sam heard her out. Said, all right. Then, can you return the mahr? Yes, gladly. He's given me an orchid. I'm prepared to give the whole thing back and call it a day. Now it was a question about where she's going to spend her iddat. So that became an issue. Because she had a mind of her own, perhaps, or the other reason that they say, that her home was a little bit isolated. So it was isolated, she wasn't so secure. So because of the insecurity, she had to move residence in order to complete her iddat, waiting period. That was allowed. That she has to go through the waiting period, but in security. There's no security here. It's an isolated spot, desolate spot, and she has to be there, woman all alone. Anything can happen. So she was moved. Now that she's moved, and her iddat has almost ended, so it was a question now that she is saying, I'm already receiving proposals. So Nabi Sim asked her not to be hasty in taking any decision. Normally, if it's a virgin, a young girl, then people don't approach her directly. If it's a woman that has already been married for 10, 15 years, then that level of shame is not there. So she can be approached by some other woman, etc. She can be approached. So Nabi Sim around this time explained to her, Fatima bint Qais, that you don't take a decision on your own. Don't haste. So we understand when taking a decision about marriage, that it is not the better thing for a woman to make her own mind. For the boy to talk to the girl, and for the girl to talk to the boy, and make a decision at that point is not the right thing, not the better thing. For several reasons. Some of the reasons are, if they are going to talk to each other, Right? One is attracted to the other, so he will show his best front. And a few days into marriage, now the other side of the man surfaces. Now she regrets why she locked herself up. Right? The same thing happens with a woman, that now she wants to get into a marriage, she'll show her best self. But as soon as she's in the marriage now, and nowadays, when she's got one child, then she will show her true colors. Because I got something to play with. Before I could deliver a child, then I didn't have something to play. Now I've got something to play with. So the boy can be guilty, and the girl can be guilty as well. It's not a one-sided thing that always men are wrong, and it's not also always women are wrong. It can be the wrong can be on this side, the wrong can be on the other end. So, to iron out these type of problems, the Sharia says that she mustn't make her own mind, own decision. She's got elders, she's got parents, she's got family elders, etc. Now, they come up with a new thing, no, I already made istikhara, and the istikhara is positive for this boy. So that means your parents were dead, you need not to. Proceed as you first speak to your parents, talk to them, that I need to get married, etc., what should I do, what are the steps? After you have followed that procedure, then you can make istikhara also, get an additional support. But now, she's jamming her whole family that I made istikhara. And she's talking about istikhara as though she's talking that I've got a divine inspiration that I must go with this person here. So hence, from this point onwards, you can't go against me. It may be that she did that istikhara, and it's possible that she did see a dream. We don't rule that off, right? But one of the adabs, one of the etiquettes of istikhara is, when the thought about marriage or about a certain person comes to your mind, just the thought, you make istikhara straight away. You don't allow the thought to linger for a month, 2 months, 3 months, and then you feel some attraction and you did something in between, and then make istikhara, no. Because the possibility is when that person has been lingering in your mind all the time, right? You're going to make istikhara, you're going to see the same person that you had istikhara about. So the istikhara is not the answer to your dua. The dream is not the answer to your istikhara. The dream was just the thought that was playing up in your mind. So first you make your mashwara, whoever the family elders are, like you're seeing in this hadith, Nabi Sallam is telling her, La ta'ajili fi amrik. Don't hasten in this. In taking a decision, don't hasten. Now there's elders, they have got some experience, they've got some understanding. They know the person, right? This person is a makeup or he's true. Is he putting up an act or he's genuine, he'll take good care. So they can find out from the experience, etc., the understanding, they make out these things. One person was getting to an argument, you know. He's right or he's right. Like how this Jamaat issue, you know. He's right or he's right. So, one alim that was around, so he gave a good answer. He says, yeah, you know what happened in India? There was a person that is selling chai, you know. Chai garam, chai garam, chai garam. So, his problem was, when the client comes in, then he gives him a story. Alright, what's the latest in the politics? India, Pakistan, this country, that country, what's happening, right? So, and he'll criticize each person. This person here, well, he's like this, and he did this, and he's involved in this corruption, and this deal, etc. So he'll run every person down. Talk about sports, that he's got an independent opinion about everybody. This person is wrong because of this reason, this was what he was involved in, drugs, etc., how he got involved. Talk of any topic and he knows it, and he'll give a rundown of the whole person. Right. The only thing that he didn't know was how to prepare his tea correctly. So everything else he knew, how to run the person down, how to examine him, how to do his business, that he failed. Absolutely failed. So his tea wasn't selling, but his stories were selling. So when you are interviewed, you know, the person that knows about interviewing, he knows, all right, this person here, what's his levels, what is his commitment, how seriously can we take him, can we take his word for granted, is he a person that is honest, will he take good care? So you can make it out. Now, people that have got experience, they understand these things. But people that don't have the experience, what happens? Say, he looks like a very good person, just take him on. 1-2 months into the marriage, now you've got a problem. Sometimes the girl is the problem, sometimes the boy is the problem. But they rush into this. So Rabbi Sam is telling her, don't you rush into this. Just wait, hold on. And she came to Rabbi Sam that my iddah is ended, and I received 2 proposals. One was from Muawiyah radiallahu anhu, and the other proposal was from Abu Jahan. These are 2 people that have sent proposals. Perhaps others may have sent, but these are the 2 people that she spoke about. So Ibn Sam explained about Abu Jahan, لا يزال أصاه على عاتقه. He marta, a little bit cheeky person. Maybe pious in his own way, but he's a little bit too strict. Perhaps what Ibn Sam was getting at is, man is too strict. The person is too strict, then you don't feel so comfortable. Very tight-lipped, strict face. So you don't know what's going to be the next move. He's going to shout to you, he's going to hit you, what's he going to do? You don't know. It's a gamble. So some people naturally are like that. They have that temperament. You will not say that, oh, that person is like this, so he's proud. You won't say that. It may be that he's not proud at all, but just that is just that his way. Otherwise, he can be a normal person, casual, he can joke, but his way is that he's a little bit tight, right? So some people are like that naturally, right? So the Sahabi must be a good person, but just that he was a little bit too strict. Right? So Nabi Sam is informing her that this is Abu Jahan. Right? And as far as Muawiyah radiyallahu, who was Sa'luk, he is not well off. Now look at it again, look at the hadith again. If it was ghibat, Nabi Sam would have never pointed out these people's weaknesses. But now you're getting into a marital relationship. When you're getting into a marital relationship, you need to know the person. And you don't know the person, and you just went into it, nobody told you because you felt afraid that this is ghibat. Therefore, nobody explained. Now how miserable you would have felt. Okay, this world, they betrayed me. They sold me away. Now I'm into this marriage. To come out of this marriage is going to be a problem. So in a relationship, when the relationship is going to be so intimate, right, in business also, when you're going to have some important things to discuss and to exchange, then you need to know the people. You knew that this person is a very bad payer, you know, bad debt, right? But you refuse to let your brother know about it. So now I'm going to get into ghibat, so I'm not going to let him know about it. Now he sold him, and he sold him for 1 million, 2 million. Then this person realizes, he deceived me. Now your brother tells you, no, I knew about it, but I didn't want to get into ghibat. Do you appreciate that? But Nabi Sam explained to Hazrat Fatima bint Qais that this is the problem of this person, this is the problem of this person. So don't rush and understand the person. So to explain the problem is not wrong. Provided it's done in honest faith, it's done in truth, you haven't got another agenda. You're truthful about it, right? Number 2, the second thing that you learn is not to act in haste. Number 3 is get someone that is experienced, that is impartial and experienced, right? Get him involved. It mustn't be a person that is partial, because perhaps he wants his own child to get married to this girl. He's got some agenda. So someone that is totally impartial, someone that is understanding, someone that can think and analyze things, so you refer to that person. Now, I have explained to you that this is the problem of this person and this is the problem of this person. I explained that to you in confidence. You are not allowed to go and sing this song in front of everybody. You know, Mufti Sahib said that this girl is like this or this boy is like this. Now, there's a wrong in the community. You disclose the credentials of someone, this is the credentials of this person, and this is the portfolio of this person here. And the person that you confided, he went and explained the whole world. Now that person comes storming against you. Okay, but, you know, who asked you to come and tell the world about my weaknesses? What business did you have? Well, that's wrong. So when you are doing a wrong, then you complicate matters. When you complicate matters, now a good person can be asking for a reference and you just don't want to give the reference. That happens now in the madrasa. They ask for reference, so we don't give reference. Because I'm giving you the reference and then you singing that song that this person told you about that person, he is like this. Right. So that person comes fighting against you, but who asked you to go and disclose all this? See? So the right thing is to disclose the identity, but you must be certain about it. Number two is not to act in haste. Number three is after you have discovered what the person is, now don't make a song about the thing, keep it to yourself. Right? Now you make a decision. So you consulted your elders. Right? So Fatima bin the Qais, she consulted with Rabbi Sallallahu Alaihi Wasallam. She didn't take a decision on her own. Number five, generally women don't know about what's going around, right? An average Muslim woman, she will prefer staying within a home, not running around, right? So she doesn't know much. When she doesn't know much, now it is the man's duty to go and find out about the person that came as a suitor. Okay, what is his background like? How is he? The man's duty is to find out about and then put her into a marriage. Just to take a decision on the spot, that's not right for him. So you see the five social problems. The five social problems that we are involved in. So now, we are trying to replace this with our own understanding. How are we replacing it? We're replacing it in this manner. So if there is a nikah now, right? Now because people are not parada conscious, so we will release these children of ours into the hall. Like how a dog is released, you know. So go and hunt. Go and hunt for yourself. So if you do hunting, hey, look at this table, yeah, how's that table? How's the table? Something looks interesting here. He'll do the hunting himself. Now, is this in keeping to etiquette and respect? You know, how shameful, how embarrassing this seems to be. The man, you can see the young boy, and he's going, and he's staring at that girl, he's staring at this girl here, he tries to start off a conversation here, conversation that side. All this is happening, and nobody speaks about it. But you see how embarrassing this is. So you come into the hall, or you go into a mall just to stare, who is the right person for me? It makes it so complicated. Then when he sees someone, he spots someone, he will just take it on face value. Just a little bit, few words, face value, and she seems to be appealing, and then he's gone. Just look at the cover, and you went in. Is that the way? The right way is to look what's within. What's the heart like? What's the character like? Does she blend into the family? Doesn't she blend into the family? The king Hazrat used to give this type of stories, you know. King is a little bit young and he's obviously he'll need to have more pleasure. So when he need to have more pleasure, now he's taking wives indiscriminately. This one also looks very attractive, this one here. So his mother advised him, you don't be so speedy in this respect. Don't take a hasty decision. Just take any girl. Now what's wrong in that? So the mother explains that this will impact on your children. If she is not right, she doesn't come from a noble background, then that will pass down to your children. They won't have that noble respects, ways, values. They won't have that. How can you see this? Or do you experiment? You try it out yourself. So now, he is noticing that he got married to this girl here, but then she's losing shape. On one side, the mother advised. On the other end, now she's beginning to lose shape. So now he's worried now, what happened? Now she came in, she's so beautiful, and now then she's losing shape. So someone advised him, see what you do. you are sitting and having meals with her. That may be a problem. She's not used to this. I know some friends came and told me, when they were talking about, you know, you must be very fair, equal to your staff and all that, and you sit and have meals with them. So they complain now, we have meals with them, put them on the same table. Now they're not eating as freely as they would eat. Because I see now the boss, he's on a diet, so much of bread, so much of salad. Now he's not used to all this. He wants his plate to be loaded. So now you told him, no, I must eat, all be equal. So now this person is not used to eating with the boss. Right. When he's not used to eating with the boss, then he'll see what is the standard of the boss. So he considers that to be the etiquette. Now that boss is very, very diet conscious, right? When he's so conscious about his diet eating, this person says, no, but I got on the table like I didn't eat anything. So to run away with this type of concept is easy. But look at the practical application. Does it apply to you? Doesn't it apply? Common sense must be used. That person is not so free. When he's not so free eating with you, then let him eat in an environment that he seems to be comfortable and relaxed. He is relaxed in that environment, let him eat like that. You are relaxed in another environment, you eat in the manner that you are relaxed, he will eat in the manner that he is relaxed. So he is eating to his full, and you are eating to your full. He is happy for what he is eating, and you are happy for what you are eating. But now he must sit with you and eat. So he's not going to eat for that. So it happened with this girl here. Now he got married, and he is just noticing that she's not eating well, and she's losing shape. So someone advised him, what you do? You let her eat separately, in her own apartment, but she must eat separately. How he did that is, he saw that, hey, now she's picking up again. I was wondering now, hey, how come? She was eating with me and she couldn't eat. Now she's eating in a separate apartment and she's coming up again. So he tried to see now, breathe somewhere this way, that way, a small hole or something, and she's watching. So the dastakhan is laid out, juice, cold drinks, savories, pies, main meal, salads, all that. So I don't know if you've seen old houses, very old houses, homes, you know, you'll find a niche where they used to put a lamp. So what this girl does now, this is the queen now, right? What she's doing, she's taken one plate and left in one niche. She's taken water, she's left in another one. She's taken the juice and left in another one. Bread and in another niche. And then, when she's put it all over, so she comes to one niche and she's got the water. So, Khuda ke naam par zara pani pila do. I beg you for some water. And she's drinking. Khuda ke naam se kuch chawal khila do. Give me some rice in the name of Allah Ta'ala. So, the king says, hey, she's coming from a begging background and she doesn't feel comfortable sitting with me. Now, this is going to impact on my children. They'll become beggars just now. What's the kingdom going to say? Hey, the king and his children are beggars. They're supposed to be giving and they are begging. So, how is it going to work? Nicely, he gave her some gifts and he separated her. I'll just give another story. So, you must look at the nobility. Does he blend in the family? Because nikah is not just for looks and for a day. She must be able to manage your home. Bear your children, manage your home, take care of everything. She must be able to do all these things. Then you take a woman into the marriage. But she can't do an inch of work. And you take into marriage. Now you talk about these facts here, then it's a problem again. Mohan just spoke something about this educated woman, and they can't fry an egg. And I'm a witness to it. I know about it. There's a big, big hue and cry. How can she say this, and how can he say this? One town you are hearing about, I won't mention the names of the towns, but this educated woman, professional woman. And without exaggeration, in one town, there's 30 professional women, all of them are divorced. Some schools, big, big schools, teachers, and all of them are divorced. So it can't work out. Them being professional people and having a and having a husband and a marital life, it may work for 5%, but the 95% is not working out. That means Allah Ta'ala created you for a different purpose. When He created you for a different purpose, and you locking yourself into a different thing, it's not working out. Somewhere down the line, there is some inconsistency. He created you for something, then you serve the role that He has created you for. Imagine a man is trying to act like a woman, doing all a woman's work. Will it work out? It won't work out, it won't look nice. A woman is trying to do a man's role. Will it work out? It will not work out, it will not look nice. So when this whole role is changed, then you're going to have a serious problem. Let her be in her place, let the man be in his place, right? One accountant was telling me that he's working now, he has to work in a corporate environment. So one Hindu woman, she seems to be coming from a noble background, right? In the one room, there's quite a few male, right? So she comes to him deliberately and says, "See, this, I need some files from that office. Can you just get it for me?" So he said, "But can't you get it yourself?" "No, I'm feeling intimidated going there." Now this is not just an isolated complaint. When working in a corporate environment, I won't be exaggerating if I say over 90% women at some level, they're feeling intimidated, harassed, intimidated. They're not comfortable. And I will blame them for it. Not that I won't blame them. I'll blame them for it because they're not supposed to be in that type of environment. The ideal environment for that woman was your home. But you moved away. You think that you will secure some good money, right? But you don't realize that, you don't realize people's temperaments. People's temperaments are different. And look, the world today, you talk about a disciplined community, right? You talk about Japan, very disciplined, honest, you know, you don't have to worry about them, they'll carry on themselves, very honest. But today, in the Japanese fast trains, they are complaining, the amount of complaints they are receiving, that where the women are being harassed, that they are on the verge of having different coaches for men and different coaches for women. The amount of complaints that they are receiving. So you're placing butter near a stove and you're asking him not to melt. It's going to happen. Man is placed there and you want him not to react. It's going to happen. It's going to be problems. So the woman goes in her place, the man goes in his place. And you cannot say that, no, it is the 21st century. For 20 centuries it worked very well. See, it's someone that studied history, right? And he's comparing facts, he's looking at facts today and look at the past 20 centuries. I remember when I was small, right? A black woman used to wear a dress, talia, just by her ankle, and a thick coarse dress. We were selling all this thing, material, cloth, we were selling it. So I know it. I know how they would come. This was the cloth, right? Her head used to be covered. Most Indian women also would be dressed in saris, and very modestly dressed. Whites, well, they were an immodest crowd, right? Always. If you look at history, they were always immodest. But around that time still, the dresses were, you didn't see a woman wearing a shirt. You will never see a woman wearing a shirt. They were wearing dresses, but I'm sure about it, I'm certain that there were dresses below the knee. Right? That was also immodest, but I can remember very clearly that the dresses were below the knee. But now, it makes you think, alright, why were they dressing like that? Now suddenly, why did they change now? So the only thing that comes to my mind, you see, up till about the 13th century Islamic, right? Islamic 13th century, that means this is the 15th century, 13th, so talk about till the 14th century, right? Till the 14th century, see, the Islamic influence and Islamic rule, etc., it ended around the turn of the millennium, right? After the 1000 year Hijri, right? And after that, Muslims relinquished their power, right? So when they relinquished its power, the influences began to decrease. That means up to 3 centuries after the power was relinquished, the influences were still permeating, floating everywhere. Modesty, shame. Men must marry women, and women must marry men. Right? That was the status quo. Right? Women need to be in parda. Men need to be venturing out for a job. So the controllers relinquished at the turn of the millennium, but the influence continued for 3 centuries. Right? After that, they lost control completely. And then when they lost control, someone else came and replaced. And now they're influencing. So as long as they were controlling and they were influencing, shame, modesty, women living in the homes, all of this was being encouraged. When that control of this was lost, and this other group had taken that control, now every vestige of shame is lost. Every fabric of shame is lost. And that fabric of shame is lost to such an extent that what values they will adopt, we are adopting their values. Before they took the value from us, they took the cue from us, right? Really, if you look at their books, they didn't even know what was paki and napaki. You know, I was looking at one English book, right? And how they would have ghusl. They would have ghusl, they would have a bath approximately once in 3 weeks or something. So just about 2 centuries ago. And how they would have a bath, there would be 2 centuries ago in England talking about, right? You'll have like one tub, right? Full of water. First the mother will bath in the same thing. The same water will be used by the daughter, by the father, husband, everybody is doing the same thing. They're jumping into that thing, washing themselves, coming out the next one, using the same one. So this recycling came from that time. So they have no shame, absolutely no shame. They have no concept of cleanliness. Just about this 2 centuries away. Until that Islamic concept, the principles, the values were on, so these people were leading like human lives. But when Islam and Muslims began to relinquish their power and was replaced with these people, so they showed their real colors. This is how they were, right? So it's a second period of darkness. There was one period of darkness then. Now this is the second period of darkness. Like one person was saying today, that in that early period of darkness, they were killing the children, right? Burying their daughters. That was one way of getting away with women. How? To bury them alive. That was the one period of darkness. Now it's a repetition of the period of darkness. So how are we destroying our daughters, sending them to university, school, etc.? Spiritually we are killing them. So it's darkness again, but in a different form. Before physically we were destroying them, now spiritually we are destroying them. One was spiritual destruction, and one is physical destruction. I am quite confident that the spiritual destruction is far, far worse than a physical destruction. They were bad, these people. Mercilessly, cold blood, and just put the child into a grave and cover him up. It was bad. You know, poets, Iqbal, he makes a comparison of the past and the future and the present. He says, what a pity, what in his poetry he's saying, in Urdu it sounds nice, right? What a pity that Fir'aun didn't discover college and university. Otherwise, he wouldn't have been bad named of killing children. See, he is bad named today for what? For killing little children. Because he didn't discover the concept of a college and school. Had he only discovered the concept of a school and university, he wouldn't have been bad named like this. Now, this is a man, Iqbal is a man, that studied in India and in London. So he saw everything, what was going on. He saw what was the good, what was the bad. And now he's giving you a fair picture of the whole story. So you are destroying it. We are thinking that we are securing the woman. What if, that question mark, what if she was divorced then? So that means in the past women were never divorced. That's what we are getting at, that in the past there was never a case of a woman being widowed, divorced, only now you're getting it. They lived and they were secure in the past, and they can live and they can be secure now as well. But the problem now is that, see, this is a different influence that has overtaken us, and we are overwhelmed with that culture. You know, this morning I was talking to the Ustad. I explained to them. One woman explained to me that around the 1940s, she says, there were some guests that came to her house. She was young at the time, perhaps 10, 15 years of age, 20 years of age, whatever. So she received some guests. So they were not in a very strong financial position at the time, talking of 1940, right? Not financially, not very strong. So they had a lounge and they had couches, but the couches were a little bit torn, right? When they were torn, they were covering up with a bed sheet. So anyway, they received that mihman. As the guests were going, and as they just got up, so that sheet that was covering just moved. And they saw all the tears they saw. And they were giggling and they moved out. So this is a little woman at that time. She was small, 10, 15 years of age, whatever. So she went and complained to her mother, because see, this mihman came, and as they were leaving, they left, and they were laughing at us, you know. But do something, take a loan or something, and replace it with good, decent couches. So she says, I still remember. She's telling me the story now recently. I still remember how my mother had reprimanded me. My mother explained to me, today we don't have the comfort, right? But we aren't financially constrained. We're eating well, we're sleeping well, we have no overheads, no accounts whatsoever, no debts whatsoever. Right? We're having good sleep, we're having a good meal, but we cannot just afford this type of comfort. So we do without it. Right? But we are not burdened with a burden of debts. The first problem will be, if we get into this, right, we are burdening ourselves with a burden of debt, right? So one is a physical burden, carrying a child. It's a problem, right? It's difficult for a long period to carry the child. But one is for your mind or for your heart to be burdened. That's even worse off. You stress, one is physically, and one is you stress mentally and your heart is stressed. I ask you, what is more dangerous? Physical, all right, you can get over it. But your heart is stressed, your mind is stressed. So she says to her child that this is going to be the first problem. Right? Number two, the second problem will be that you are doing it just to look smart in the presence of people. So it is not for your comfort, it is for the comfort of the eyes of the beholders. Not for you and your family. So your family and yourself, you didn't gain the comfort of this. Who gained the comfort? The people that came. How often they'll come? Maybe once a week or twice a week they'll come. And they'll go, they'll sit for an hour, 2 hours, they'll sit, they'll talk, and they'll move away. For their 2 hours of comfort, you must put yourself into problems. It's not worth the bargain. That's the second problem, right? The third problem, she says, now because you have burned yourself with this debt, with this load, her mother is explaining her, you know, right? At night you'll be restless. Okay, hey, before the end of the month, I need to pay this installment. I have problems, right? Whether you took it to a bank, then it's even worse. You're paying the installment with interest. And if you're owing someone, then too, it's a burden in your mind. I have to owe this person so much. So at night, you are restless. Right? In the day, it's an embarrassment. If you see the person, you're trying to avoid him. So, hey, this person comes to Hilal Masjid, so I need to go to Glenan Road. Won't you feel difficult to come face to face with him? If he only asks me from everybody, hey, you know, but this month's payment, man. Shine up, man. You come for Namaz? So can't you just pay me? Can't you see me right? So you'll do a lot of ducking and diving just to cover your face. What you got of the whole thing, what you got? You got nothing but a better face. I say you got no face. I say that you got no face. Within yourself, you are absolutely miserable. But just to appear good in front of people, you have done all this. See what the Quran Sharif is saying. إِذَا أَنفَقُوا لَمْ يُسْرِفُوا وَلَمْ يَقْتُلُوا وَكَانَ بَيْنَ ذَلِكَ قَوَامًا. When they spend, they're not extravagant and they're not miserly. They strike a balance between, according to my means, I will enjoy. I can't have it, finish. I can't have mutton every day. MashaAllah, I'm eating, I'm comfortable, I'm relaxed. So what's the problem? I don't need to spend money just to appease your mind or to appease your eyes. I don't need to do that. I'm right, I'm comfortable. Why must I put myself into difficulty and problems? But you see now where this culture is coming from. It's coming from these people here, who had no discipline, just went a little bit to school, learned to speak English, and to speak with a little bit of a accent, you know. That's all they got. A little bit of speech, and the speech with a little bit of an accent, right? And the third thing they've got is how to ridicule, right? this class of people, that's the third thing they've learned, how to ridicule someone. He's doing it right, but how to ridicule him. Right? So when you feel ridiculed and embarrassed, you feel yourself inferior, and then you want to imitate them. But what did you get out of it? You lost your own hope. Because tumhari ghar ki baatein thi, usko tum kho bete. What was your own values, you lost them. So you're not in your home, you're not outside your home. Right? At least in your home, you're secure. If you are outside by someone else, you are secure there. But you are in your home, you are not outside your home. So where you are? You are hanging in between. When you left Islam, when you left your culture, this is what happened to you. So this woman is explaining that, my mother, this is the third thing that she explained. And the fourth thing that she explained, she says, see, besides these three problems, right, you are acting against deen. Nabi Sam did take a loan, right? But under what circumstance did he take a loan? He took a loan when it reached a point of starvation. He didn't have grains, basic grains to provide his wives, right? Respected wives, he didn't have that. So that's a responsibility. You got married, so you need to take care of them. And I don't have the basic commodity to provide for their livelihood. So just to provide them with grains, he had taken a loan. So, to take it at an excruciating circumstance is a different thing. And just so that you may look a little bit better in the eyes of people, I got a car now, so just upgrade the car and just go through the banks. So, I'm taking the strain, I'm taking that burden. I need a better house now, so just to upgrade the house, I need to do this thing here. All my friends, all my circle of friends are going for holiday here, there, so I need to do these things here. So, in order for me to manage the lifestyle, I need to take that additional amount. In the meanwhile, your children are watching what you are doing. When they are watching what you are doing, this is the type of living, house, car, holiday, etc. It's become an addiction. Now, they have to serve that, they have to continue slaving for that addiction. Because you made a mess up of yourself. You made a mess up of your children. They want something and you gave it to them. They want something and you give it to them. Not realizing that you're putting yourself deeper and deeper in the hole. Spend what you can manage. What you can't manage, you can't manage. But you see, that was the original style, and you moved away from this. So I was explaining this concept, you know, from where to where it takes you. One was the original Islamic value. When it was the original Islamic value, then what was the status quo in the world? And when Islam was replaced with these type of people, it's their influences that is running. When their influences are running, now you can't differentiate a man from a woman. Can you differentiate from the peers? Someone is walking 100 meters away from you. Can you differentiate? Can't make out. Is there harassment or not in the workplace, in the streets, in the schools, universities? The whole world you find harassment. At the government level you find it. You hear news reports. At a government level, in a parliament building, and parliament members are being harassed. Don't you hear that? Right. So the clothing has changed. The roles have changed. Right. When the roles have changed, the clothing has changed. So now within the house, there is no boss. She feels I am generating income, and he feels I am generating income. And both of us are identical, because I am bringing in finance, you are bringing in finance. So in that respect, both of us are identical. When both of us are identical, then is there any boss in the house? So what is now the conclusion, what is the result? You have divorce. Because now I want to be the boss and he wants to be the boss. When both want to be the boss, then can the home run properly? In your shop now, your staff wants to be the boss. Can it happen? Saying, do it like this. Staff saying, no, do it like this. Can it work? Can't work in your small shop. Can't happen in the country. Everybody wants to be the boss. Nobody wants to be the citizen and take the instruction from the head. Can it run? So it can't happen in a government. It can't happen in your home. It can't happen in a workplace. You need to have a head and need someone to just take direction from the head. Then the thing can run. So we're talking about this nobility, right? So the mother is explaining the child. But you don't just get married to anybody. He is in his youth now and bursting with energy. He got one wife, second wife, third wife. Mother said, "Boy, that's not the way you run your life. Go and try them out. You must see nobility, respect. Look at all these things here. Without the trial, without the examination, you can't make out." So anyway, he got his three wives separately. One room, he's got one, second one, third one. The first one he asked the first one, "Okay, how do you make out that it's the morning now? How do you make out?" So this one says that when I see the radiance, you know, and the glitter on the diamond of my ring, you know, I make out now it's Subho Sadiq, it's about Fajr time. Alright, she passed the examination, finished. He asked the second one, "And how do you make out that it's Fajr time? How do you make out?" So this one says, you know, when it's about Fajr time, I feel so divine, so relaxed mentally. I feel the feeling of tranquility and peace I feel. So I make out now that it's Fajr time. Then he comes to the third one, "How do you make out that it's Fajr time?" "I make out jab ghoo nikalta hai." When I think it's coming out, I make out. Now, she made out by that what my mother said was right. That she's got absolutely no nobility, respect. This is what she's going to pass on to my children. My children will be now, you know, an embarrassment for me. They'll be a disgrace for me. It's not just marriage and excitement and entertainment. It's tomorrow as well. When these children grow up, then they'll be a reflection of their parents. So we're talking about Fatima bint Qais radiyallahu anha. And she was told that you don't make an independent decision. And she's told, and she's explained by Nabi Sassam that you don't make your own decision. You hold on in this respect, wait. So first you will make mashwara. After mashwara, then you make istikhara. But you put the horse before the cart, it's wrong. You're doing it in reverse. So, first two proposals that were received, Nabi Sam turned them down. Now there is a hadith which says, "La yakhtubu ala khitbati akhi." Right? "La tabi' ala bay'i akhi." That you don't send a proposal over the proposal of your brother. You don't counter a business proposal. You know, a business proposal, he did a bargain, so you don't counter that bargain. Now then what is the meaning of the hadith? Here Nabi Sam is telling him that you don't take a decision, and here the hadith is saying that you don't counter proposal, you don't counter bargain. So what is the meaning of don't counter bargain then? Because it would seem like one person sent a proposal, then the second person sent a proposal, now this is called a counter proposal. Over his proposal, this one is sending another proposal. Over his bargain, this one has sent another bargain. So there is a different meaning to the hadith. The meaning of the hadith is that he sent a proposal, right? But these people are not interested yet. They didn't make up their mind, they're not considering. They're not considering at all. When they're not considering yet, now you are allowed to counter proposals, to send a Understand? They haven't considered yet, they're not interested, they didn't make up their minds. Now you want to send another proposal, you have got the liberty to make a counter proposal. Now, to make the children understand the story here, you know, I explain them. It doesn't mean that if one person sends a proposal, then the next person can't send a proposal at all. I'll show you the application of the hadith, but let me show you it in reverse, so you'll get the hadith properly in your mind. Just imagine for a moment, one woman, right, 99 years of age, ugly as ever, right, she sent a proposal for you. Right? You are 25, young, blooming with energy, looks, attraction, and she sent a proposal for you. And she's blocking off every other proposal. See, I sent a proposal for this person here, and nobody was. Is it on? Obvious reason, isn't it? You're not going to consider that proposal at all. So, where these people that are receiving the proposal, they're not considering that, you are allowed to send another proposal. So you can't block off, you can't say, no, I send a proposal, so nobody must send a proposal to this home because I send a proposal, you can't say that. It's left to their discretion. Are they interested? If they're interested, then I don't count a proposal. The same happens in a business, right? I have made a bargain for his car, right? Second-hand car, he's selling for 30,000, right? Right. Now he's not considering, hey, what do you think of my car here? It's worth 80,000, you give me 30,000. So, he is not at all interested in the bargain that I made. Now you got all the right to counter that. You say, alright, I'll pay you 70,000. Now he's got something to play with. But you say, no, I made a bargain, so nobody has got the right to counter bargain. That's wrong. The first bargain was ridiculous. I'm not going with that. See, now this is the meaning of the hadith. Understood that thing now in context. Now this is an afat of the zamana, that everybody wants to independently understand hadith. One mulana came here. Today is Saturday. So yesterday one mulana came here. So he says, now, I was in this town here, right? And someone passed away. So they were making Salatul Janaza al-Ghaib. Right? So the person from this town passed away perhaps in India. So they were making Janaza Namaz for him here in South Africa. So they ran it with me. When they ran with me, I said, no, it's not right. So the people that were discussing was a doctor, and he said, no, but this comes in a hadith. That Najashi passed away, and Nabi Sam made Salatul Janaza al-Ghaib for him. In his absence, Nabi Sam had made Salatul Janaza at Medina Munawara for him. So I asked the Mullah, what answer did you give? So he said, no, the answer that I gave was that, but Imam Abu Hanifa Rahmatullah says that it's not right. So I told Mullah, that was not the right answer to give. So, but what? But it is our mazhab, but why do you say that I didn't give the right answer? I told him that, see, the normal person will think like this, that you are bringing Imam Abu Hanifa Rahmatullahi at the level of Nabi's person. So that's a primary mistake. That's a mistake that you made. So how should I have answered? Should have answered him like this, that, alright, Nabi Sam did perform the namaz, but what do you know the circumstance? If you don't know the circumstance, then it's half a fact. And a half a fact is worse than a lie. So, Imam, can you explain that? So now see, I say, I don't know the circumstance, but I said, alright, you know, Nabi Sam performed 2 rakats of Zuhr namaz. At this date, Nabi Sam performed 2 rakats, so I'm going to perform 2 rakats of Zuhr namaz. So I said, no, but Abu Hanifa Ramta says that no one must read 4 rakats. Now that person, no one understand. The right thing is to ask him, what were the circumstances of Nabi Sam performing 2 rakats of namaz? If you know the circumstance, then the application will be right. But you don't know the circumstance, then you are taking a shot in the dark. You're just guessing around, speculating. Yes. He had performed the 2 rakats of namaz, but whilst he was on a journey. Are you on a journey now? So you don't have all your facts, and you just take one hadith randomly and you want to apply that hadith onto yourself. Is it right? Umar radiallahu anhu was discussing an inheritance problem, right? That in the absence of the father, then the grandfather will inherit, right? The father is dead, is deceased, right? So then the next in line will be the grandfather. So Umar radiallahu anhu is asking the Sahaba Ikram, what is going to be the share of the grandfather in the absence of the father? Right. What is going to be the share? So one sahabi says 1/6. 1/6. So Umar radiallahu anhu asked him, but what is the circumstance? You see, he is entitled to 1/6. Right. But is he that eligibility a general, you know, it's applicable generally in all cases, or in a certain circumstance. So no, that I don't know. But I know that this is the share of a grandfather. I don't know whether it means that it is in the presence of a father or in the absence of a father. I don't know about that. All I know is that his share is 1/6. So Umar says him, La Daraita, you didn't understand this. Now who's he speaking to? He's speaking to a sahabi. And a leading sahabi. He's telling him that La Bari, that you didn't understand this. So that means to understand ilm, you need to know the circumstance. If you don't know the circumstance, then you are guessing, it's speculation. You can mislead and you can mislead others. See this phrase, oh, do you follow Abu Hanifa or do you follow Nabi Sallallahu Alaihi Wasallam? So people that are talking like this, they are talking like this, speculating. They just take talking like this randomly. And this random speaking is dangerous. Now I can say, alright, you know, randomly speaking, giving half a fact. Half a fact is worse than a lie. I can say the Quran Sharif says, let alone performing namaz, the Quran Sharif says, don't even come near namaz. La taqrabu salah. This in the Quran, don't even come near namaz. Now if I give you half a fact, what will be the impression that is created? That namaz is a serious crime. It's such a serious crime that you mustn't even come close to namaz. Won't that be the impression that is created? Won't that be the understanding? Why? What was the reason for this impression? The reason for this impression was that I gave you half the fact. And half the fact created this confusion. But now, it is our habit, you know. Listen to that program, this radio here, that radio, Radio Islam, Radio Ansar, CII, this are so many programs, but with all the pro garam, you didn't become garam sir. So thunder, ke thunder reh gaye. So many, so much of programs you read up and read and listen this one here, that one there. Because you don't know what applies to which situation. If you know what applies to which situation, now you've got a direction. Yes, the Quran Sharif says don't come close to namaz. But you just left it, don't come close to namaz, and you left the people in suspense. Now they don't know what the circumstance is. All they heard is, you know, coming to namaz, they don't even come close to namaz. So the understanding you got is a major wrong to come even close to namaz, let alone performing namaz. But now when you give the circumstance, لا تقربوا الصلاة وأنتم سكارى. In the state of intoxication, don't come close to namaz. Now isn't it complete? So this is the problem of the day, that we're giving half a fact, and the person that is listening is understanding half, he's going with quarter, and what he's passing on is 1/8, and then you get a mix up. So take that little, but understand the circumstance. Understand it full. Nobody saying don't learn, but learn it correctly. Understand it in perspective. Understand it in perspective, you won't confuse yourself, nor will you create confusion for others. But in this way, you're creating confusion for yourself, you're creating confusion for others. See this? Simple thing, how simple it looks. Understand the circumstance, understand the application, and then carry on. So, as Fatima bint the case, we're talking of this story here, right? We're branching off quite a bit, right? But inshallah, I think people's minds are opening out. And my idea at the talk is not to give you new stories. It's not my idea. My idea is that we learn to think correctly. Because there's an abundance, there's an explosion of information. But now how do you apply that information? Nobody wants to take out the pain, take out the time to understand how do we apply that information that we have received. Everybody thinks, I'm right. What I'm doing is right. Every person thinks like that. So as Fatima says, that when I heard Nabi Sam saying this, that don't you rush into things, so I just held myself back. Right? Now she's coming from a very noble background, Quraysh background. Now that Quraysh background is like the highest amongst the Arabs, is the highest family. Right? Like now, for example, Parak family is the highest, right? Right? Now a small little person like say on this Parak, you're jumping too high, right? That's what you say, isn't it? Because now this family has got a certain level. You've got a certain level now. Someone is coming at this level and he comes to jump like this, you know. So now you're overdoing it. Understand your level and then you jump. You don't jump beyond. Right? So now she's coming from a Quraysh background, and amongst the Arabs, the Quraysh is about the most noblest. In the meanwhile, Nabi Sam suggests to Fatima, you get married to Usama bin Zayd, radiyallahu anhu, right? Now Usama bin Zayd al-Jilan, whose mother was a black woman, right? And his father was tainted with the slavery. Right? Mother is Umm Ayman, and father was tainted with slavery. Zayd ibn Harisa, radiyallahu anhu, right? So now, in any community, now your father was a slave. So if you have a problem, yeah, we expected that of you, because we know your background, we know your lineage, right? We expected that. Father was a slave. Now, amongst people, this thing doesn't go down very well. Oh, this is your background, so this is expected of you. So people don't show that level of respect. So now when the suggestion came from Nabi Sun, they were a little bit apprehensive. Okay, should we take this seriously or not? Because now this is the background of the person that is sending the proposal, Usama bin Zayd. His father was a slave, mother is a black woman. Now should we take this on? So they gave it a second thought, said, no, no. But this is a decision of Nabi Sallallahu Alaihi Wasallam. If you want to leave it out, really we're causing problems for ourselves. And if you want to take it on, perhaps our minds will not be able to register, but they'll be good in this, right? So in all this what we are doing, right, we're talking about marriage and all that, in all what we are discussing, if it is a family person that is genuine, he understands, he sees, right, and he is quite firm about something, then it's better to go with what he's saying. Because he's got the experience, he's got the righteousness, he's not partial, he's not partial, right? He's impartial. So he's got all the good qualities, and he's telling you something that doesn't seem to be so good. But it's your fortune then to listen to him. Because it'll take him a lot of time to explain all the details. He's got all the facts and figures, and he's asking you, take this, right? You won't go wrong. What I'm talking about doesn't have to be just specific to marriage. Maybe it's business. He says, well, you take this business on. You buy that car. He doesn't have the time to explain all the details. But you do this business, you buy that car. Now it is your fortune to listen to him. And 9 out of 10, it will be your misfortune to avoid him. 9 out of 10 to avoid him, it will be your misfortune, and it will be your fortune to listen to him. Although, you know, on the cover, it doesn't seem to be so appetizing. But what he's saying, he's saying it with knowledge, understanding, righteousness and virtue, so that there will be good in what he's saying. So anyway, Nabi Sallallahu Alaihi Wasallam suggested that you take Usama bin Zayd in marriage. Now it was a difficult decision. You see the family lineage, right? And how it goes, right? And then what the world will say. So any woman will think, like, and who cares? What is the world going to say? So anyway, when it came from Nabi Sallallahu Alaihi Wasallam, and Nabi Sallallahu is speaking from Allah Ta'ala, and another buzuk, he cannot say what he's saying is exactly sanctioned by Allah Ta'ala. Yes. But the Nabi can say that this is what I'm saying, what I'm deciding on, is approved and is decided by Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala himself. He can say it. Very clearly he can say it. Categorically he can say it. That you go with this. So they thought about it. Well, this coming from reason. See, understand a Nabi and non-Nabi. A non-Nabi's word can't be taken so seriously. Because Abu Bakr radiyallahu anhu is sitting in a company of Sahaba Ikram and others. And he's really disappointed with one person's behavior. Extremely disappointed. So one person got up, said, "Ya Amir Mumin, can I just put him away?" Now, in the meanwhile, up till that point, Abu Bakr radiallahu was angry. Was really angry and upset at this person's behavior. So when he said that, "Can I put him away?" Abu Bakr just regained his composure, became absolutely composed. And he asked him, "If I'm going to instruct you to put him away, will you do that?" He said, "I will do it, definitely I will do it." So, well, that right was the right of Nabi Sallam himself. Nobody else got that right. Understand, you're not the Nabi. So Abu Bakr, he set the record right. That the Nabi can say that. He's at his position. After a Nabi, nobody's got that position. Then you need justification, you need reason, you need proof. Why, when, how, all that you need to have. Everything is right, everything is in place. Right? Then you take a step, it's right. But you haven't got your facts and figures right. and you go and take a decision, you can land yourself into problems. See, Abu Bakr, he's really upset with the person, very upset with the person, and in a moment, how he can recompose himself. Now that is the person that you can call Khalifatul Mu'min. That is the person you could say that's the best after Nabi Sallallahu Alaihi Wasallam. Because in a moment he can be upset, really upset. In a moment he can gain his composure. Now that is an administrator. See, he can administer. He's got that control, he's got that level of composure, that level of tranquility and understanding. In a second he can go this way, in a second he can come back. Otherwise, most of us, when we're going to bring us back to composure, it takes a lot of time. Not a difficult, not an easy thing. You think it's an easy thing, but you put yourself into that position and bring yourself back to tranquility and composure is a mighty task. So Abu Bakr says, if I'm going to ask you to put the person away, I'm going to do this. Say, no, nobody's got the right. After Nabi Sam, nobody's got the right. He has been directed by Allah Ta'ala himself. So Nabi Sam has the right. After him, any person called the best dream or the best kash he's got, you got no right. You can't do that. So as Fatima bint Qais, she says, then when I heard this from Nabi Sallallahu Alaihi Wasallam, I must get married. Yeah, I got married. Irrespective now. You know, it's a family thing, customary thing and all that. So I just left all the things out and I went with the directive that I received from Nabi Sallallahu Alaihi Wasallam. So she says, summa tubiktu. After that, I was envied. Because the respect that he showed, the beauty that he brought to the marriage, to the marital home, the wealth that he brought, the comfort that he brought, most of the Quraysh wouldn't have been able to match him. He brought so much of love, understanding in the family, that the Quraysh wouldn't have been able to match him. Summa tubittu. I was then envied for the type of person that I took in marriage. Now you see, the beauty of listening to your elder. And now, when we crossed away from this, like I say, when it was an Islamic culture, right? It was an Islamic culture. It ran, right? It ran very well. When it ran very well, people that are over 75 years of age, ask them, how did they get married? Was it a cattle show? Samosa run? No, I said, I put it, I said, this girl, she's suitable to you. All right. You think that you saw about the girl? Ma, I know about the girl. But the strange thing is that they did the marriages like that, and I think 99% of the marriages all worked out. So they were good at heart, they were honest, experienced, and the children were also righteous and obedient. So it worked for both. For the home it worked, for the children it worked.